Hello, kamusta Taekwondo lovers? Welcome to the 8th episode of this podcast, Taekwondo Matters. Our guest is Pauline Lopez, a Philippine Taekwondo Jin who is determined to bounce back after a failed Olympic bid. The 24-year-old Lopez kissed her Tokyo Olympics hopes goodbye last May after losing in the quarterfinals of the women's 57-kilogram category at the Asian Taekwondo Olympic Qualification Tournament in Amman, Jordan. She was 2 wins away from making it to the Games. Nowadays, Pauline can be found chilling at her grandparents' suburban digs in Quezon City, exercising her option to reset and rewire. She continues to train, keep in shape, and pick up where she left off from her university studies. The defeat at Jordan understandably still affects her. It's the second time Pauline's Olympic bid got crushed, with the first one happening in 5 years ago in Manila when she lost in the semi-final round. But she is more philosophical about her loss now. Talking to Taekwondo Matters, Pauline says, "I know one thing for sure is that anytime adversity comes my way, I bounce back." Pauline adds that she gave everything on the mat and lifted it all up to him. It may not be the result she wanted, but she believes there's a reason for everything. During the interview, Pauline also thanked everyone who keeps on supporting her, especially her family, friends, coaches, Grandmaster Sung Chun Hong of the Philippine Taekwondo Association, the Philippine Sports Commission, the Manny V. Pangilinan Sports Foundation, and UniCity Philippines. Pauline shows a sober perspective about life, coming after so heartbreaking a loss, after years of sacrifice for her chosen passion. The perspective she displays is sharply focused, so astonishing for somebody so young. This perspective is firmly anchored on a relentless search for learning, both on and off the mat, in a bid to meet her two ambitious aspirations: to be able to provide for herself and her family, and to be able to leave a mark when she retires from the sport. Tonight's interview likewise shows a side of Pauline which rarely surfaces in the media. Away from Taekwondo, Pauline says she wants to be remembered for her platform, particularly her strong belief in woman empowerment. This young lady wants to be known not just for her sport, but her advocacies and those she is trying to help. There's also a deeply rooted interest in experiencing the different avenues life has to offer outside her world as a Taekwondo Jin. That includes, for now, going back to Ateneo de Manila, where she plans to complete her units as a psychology undergraduate. When her schedule clears up, Pauline promises to be active again in Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook, among others. The rest, time will eventually reveal, including a retirement date which, at least in the present, does not have a deadline. We hope you'll enjoy the interview with Pauline Lopez. Please click the like button and subscribe to the podcast Taekwondo Matters if you do. Okay, what's up, Pauline Lopez is in the house. Good evening, Pauline, how are you?
Good evening, Sir Joel, I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, and like I said earlier, I didn't want to bother you after I knew you were so busy after the Tokyo Olympic qualifiers in Jordan and the Asian the habit has been there, but no, these were Asian live championships in Lebanon, so you know, and I know you've been so busy and now you're back getting yourself together, gathering yourself together both physically and mentally, and in fact you said earlier back to school, and by the way, why don't you greet your your millions of followers because you're also a SockMed influencer. Say hi to them all. A lot of people did not hear from you. Say hi tell them, assure them that you're okay.
Hello, you guys. I hope you guys are doing well. Thank you so much for tuning in. It feels really good to say hello to you guys and talk about my story and be here with Sir Joel. And especially if you're Taekwondo practitioners, I hope you all are staying fit and mentally good during these times.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's important. Well, Pauline, this podcast, actually, it's a new podcast. And I started it basically, because of the boredom of the COVID-19 pandemic, but also because I really felt that there is a need for a platform, a listening post in which Taekwondo lovers in the Philippines and even elsewhere can relate to, we've had some guests. You were supposed to be one of the first guests, but I felt that you needed some space when you were training for the Tokyo qualifiers. And there it is. A lot of the people who subscribe to this podcast are those who really are into Taekwondo, practitioners and parents, stakeholders, coaches, that sort of thing. Anyway, let's start with one question, Pauline. I mean, again, for those of you who don't know you, who have been living under a rock for the last decade in Taekwondo, who is Pauline Lopez?
That is such a big question and sometimes hard to answer. But one thing I can definitely say about myself and who I am is whatever I set my mind to, whatever I do, whoever I am, one thing I always back it up is hard work. Now, I always say this because whether it's in school, my sport, relationships with my family, with my friends, you have to constantly work on it. It's a conscious effort, work on it. So there's that. And I feel that right now it's really hard to answer that, sir. That is definitely something that I can say about myself. Okay. I'm a practitioner, I'm a martial artist, I'm a daughter, I'm a friend, I'm a sister, of course I have siblings, and I'm a granddaughter, a cousin, anything that you can name. Okay. But there you go, sir.
Okay, we'll return to that in some aspects of that question anyway later. Because there are a lot of people who are really interested, particularly, there have been very few, not few, but there's been a smattering of Philippine American athletes, in basketball, in swimming, in track and field, in Taekwondo, you and, my senior moment there, your teammate from De La Salle, I'm sorry.
Chris,
Chris, hi there, Chris, if you're listening. Sorry for forgetting you. I mean, you guys have made tremendous sacrifices. You guys, I know very few Phil-Am millennials who would elect to go back to, while it is the country of the birth of their parents, would rather stay in good old USA and go to university there and stay in their comfort zone. But you guys didn't do that. We'll go back there later, Pauline. But for now, let's go through a bit of history. How did you start in Taekwondo? I mean, of course, that's a stupid question because you are the daughter of one of the champions of Taekwondo in the 1990s.
I definitely love talking about this.
Yeah. How did you start in Taekwondo? How old were you?
Okay. My father was teaching Taekwondo as a second job, and it's something he loves and he's passionate about. So one day he brought me with him, me and my siblings, and I was looking at people kick and I'm like, why hasn't my dad introduced this sport to us? Like, why? What's going on? This is so cool. And at the time, my father said, no, I don't want you to do this sport. There's a reason why I don't want you to do this sport. And I'm over here thinking, what is it? Like, what? But come to find out, years later, he was injured, a very tragic accident. And that's something he didn't want to happen to his kids. And I just urged him, Dad, please let me do this. Like, this is so fun. Are you kidding? A girl kicking? And first he said to me, no, I don't want you to be doing this because one, you're a girl. This is not what girls do. This is a masculine sport. And that's when I thought to myself, no, you can't tell me I can't do something for the sole fact that I'm a girl. There's that. And I just wanted to prove him wrong. So he had me join a class and he saw that I was already throwing kicks like naturally, I guess. And then from then on, sir, he saw the potential as a yellow belt. I was already sparring older kids and have that like fire that I really want to do it compared to my siblings. And from then on, it just became our sport. It's something that I grew to love, not just kicking someone, but the values that came with it. It helped me tremendously with school, with relationships with my family, working hard with whatever. And my brother and my older sister actually did taekwondo also. My brother was a U.S. national team member back then. He doesn't do taekwondo now. He still kicks and punches, but not competitively. And my older sister as well. And this is something that not a lot of people know, but my siblings were way better than me. Like,
really?
They were so natural. Like, when they would spar, everything comes easy. But for me, it was hard. It didn't come as easy. So that's why I had to back it up even more with hard work.
Okay.
And there's that competitiveness between my siblings and I. Like, we wanted to just be better than the other. And it helped us elevate our game for sure. But I started out going to training with my father, and then we met Sir Dean Vargas, who was also...
Wait a minute, just a second. Just a second, Pauline. Do you remember the first class you ever attended? What did you wear?
Yes.
What were your first impressions? Were you the smallest person or what?
Actually, I was only turning 8 years old. I was in jeans pants, because it was... I didn't even expect my dad to say, okay, fine, you can do it. Because I kept urging him. One time after school, he told me, okay, come without any athletic wear. And I just started in jeans. I remember trying the 45 degree kick. And as someone who doesn't even know what it is, it was so hard. It's hard to pivot your toes, hard to pivot.
Yeah.
And I still remember other kids who were trying it out as well. I'm like, okay, if they can do it, I know I can do it too.
Okay.
I never forgot my first class.
Were you active in other sports, other things? Did you do ballet or at least or whatever? Or volleyball or?
No. But one thing I know for sure is that I love running. Like, even before taekwondo, my dad would always wake me. I don't know why it's always me, but before taekwondo, he'd wake me up at 6 and we'd go run before going to school. Mm-hmm. So there's that, sir. I did track and field. When I had a year or two off from taekwondo, I did track and field. I was a long distance runner, 800 meters,
wow.
400 meters.
That's a power event. Yeah, okay.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now, you were mentioning about, you met Sir Dean Vargas. So how did that go? I mean...
So he was going to start his own school. He contacted my dad with a connection of TBB, with a connection of national team back then. And my dad started to teach at Quest, and I met him. And before the school even started, we were training. I was training with him and another partner I had. He also did taekwondo, kurugi and pumse, and we were training, and we started training in the garage, in my house, in Sir Dean's apartment. We were training because I wanted to compete competitively. I wasn't even a black belt yet, but the training we had was twice a day. I was only a blue belt, I believe, sir. And it was hard. It was tough. It was something new to me. I didn't know that taekwondo was so competitive. And I didn't understand it at the age of 8. Why are we training so much? For what? But then I realized when I went to a tournament, oh, wow, I want to be that good. And okay. I remember...
First tournament, what were your first views when you saw these tournaments? What was the first feelings?
Oh, so I started competing. I remember my first opponent. And I was just going at it, sir. Like, you know, I was like young, 8-year-old. close to 9 year old, I didn't know what stamina was, endurance, but what I knew was I just wanted to kick. I just wanted to kick a red circular target and keep going. That was the goal.
You were still not the Pauline technical methodical.
No,
feeling.
Like I just wanted to hit the red target because that's the goal.
Yes.
And then at the end of the fight, I remembered my opponent. I even still have a picture. My opponent was crying, and I looked at my dad like, "Should I stop? Like, she's crying. Like, what do I do? Like, should I cry with her? I'm not sure." But then
cry with her.
But then when they say that feeling, I'm like, okay, I finally understand it now. That's why we train so much for that moment of victory.
That must have been a hell of a feeling to understand that, oh, so this is why we're working our asses off.
It was like a light bulb, but quick, I didn't understand yet, you know, sir.
Quick question. I mean, of course, Coach Dean Vargas and your dad, Master Jun Lopez, are two of the most, if I will describe them, two of the most competitive, but also the most stylistically and technical players there is in the universe of Taekwondo. I mean, and these two, besides, have not been mired or held back by the 80s or 90s. Whatever is the new game now, they also know. And so how were they as both mentors and as coaches and as people close to you? I
mean, it's literally tremendous. I am so blessed to have Sir Dean was my coach. And my father, my grandma.
It's okay, don't worry about it. Interrupter.
No, it's okay. When I was very competitive, that's when I was under the wings of Sir Dean Vargas. And how he coached me is, he wanted me to become a well-rounded fighter.
What does that mean? What do a well-rounded fighter mean?
Not just,
for our listeners out there,
he wanted me to understand why we have to do stamina training, why we have to do technical training, why we only have to work on one kind of kick and master that one kick. He wanted to teach me how to be patient when I fought. He wanted me to understand the ring, why you need to move back at certain moments, why you need to move forward, and even just small gestures of your eyes, of your face, how you carry yourself, how you wear your uniform, how neat you should look, because if you look good, you feel good, you perform good. Those things, those little things matter. And once you perform, he taught me that you give your best. What you put out there is yourself. And I'm in the back. I can see everything. I can help guide you. But at the end of the day, it's you.
It's you. Yeah.
You're the one in battle.
Okay.
And for my father, he's always been tough. Man, oh man. He's always been tough. The so-called tough love. I didn't have a normal childhood, no parties, no going out, you know, to the mall with my friends. I didn't even attend my prom because I had tournaments.
That's terrible.
No, but that's okay. At the end of the day, I became a champion in different tournaments, but that comes with sacrifice. So there's that. My dad has always taught me sacrifice, hard work, and even during losses, he was definitely tough on me. But those moments, I look back at it now and okay, wow, like my dad really prepared me, you know, going to another country, he's not always there to guide me. So I have these like thoughts in my head and keeps me balanced, keep me checked. So having them both, and not just them, actually, I was also under Sir Bobby Vargas, which is Sir Dean's brother.
Oh yes, okay.
For a time, and I had his old school and new school combined as well, and it was good. It was great. I had great mentors, great coaches. They're not just coaches to me. They're also like besides my dad, I also looked up to them as almost like an uncle, almost father figure as well, to guide me through life.
Well, here's it might be a question which you had answered already, but when did you first realize that you loved doing taekwondo, that it wasn't play anymore, that it was now serious. I mean, you mentioned that from Coach Dean Vargas, you saw that, no, this is how you train. This is one kick, you practice it 1,000 times, you know, and this is, and then from your father, this is the intensity, this is the sacrifice. And I know this because your father is the most, is the guy who's really given a lot of sacrifice. Meanwhile, Coach Bobby Vargas is the old school, and this is, there's only talk one way tough. Or the highway, talk tough, look tough. And for a girl who were at that age, that's a lot of things to take in. When did you start taking it seriously? That, okay, I'm gonna marry these all, merge this all, and you know,
actually, go with it. I started very young. It was 2008 Beijing Olympics. I saw Miss Tony Rivera on screen.
Okay.
I saw That is the Olympics. That is why people train so much. That is why you start. And as soon as I saw it on, you know, back then it was, you couldn't even like download the fights. Yes. But back then it was live. And I'm just really watching. My siblings didn't want to watch it, but me, yeah. I was sitting down with my dad and I'm just watching it. And, you can hear the silence with just one kick, kapow, you know, the old school way with the the click where they
from
score
the corner and, judges, yeah.
And you'd see players once they go to the finals, it's just a lot of waiting because they're at the, this is amongst best of the best, a little mistake.
Yeah.
And I'm looking there at 9 years old and I'm like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah, the evolution of Kyorugi. And you were saying that that was the definitive moment for you watching the Beijing Olympics. You watched Master Chom Lee Go and Master Tony Rivero, and this was the time when taekwondo now became very technical. It wasn't the age of electronic scoring yet, but here was the thing that the people show up in the Olympics at the highest level of skill, but now it is not just kicking all over the place. It's really being technical, watching, strategizing, plan A, plan B, plan C, that sort of stuff. And
and back then, Nick, you really had to sell it, you know, like those crazy shouts, those crazy hop jumps when you score. That's definitely something I grew up with. And it's just crazy looking back at how things evolved.
Okay.
I went through the whole objective scoring, and then I went through LeJust.
Yeah.
I remember LeJust.
Yeah.
And then manual, then Dado, KPNP.
Hey, later, Pauline, we'll talk about that. I'm gonna put you at the spot, as I do a lot of my guests with regards to that. But so let's not talk about that, Muna. So we'll go back. Oh, looks like my notes are garbled all over the place again. But okay. So you trained in the U.S. and then how did the first glimmer of an idea that why go to the Philippines? I mean. The best coaches are there. Before you answer, the best coaches are there. There's Coach Dean. There's your dad. The top competitors in the U.S. are there. But of course, that's USA, Team USA. How did the idea of going to the Philippines, and I'm sure your dad didn't have an a say in this. I mean, or
actually, you tell me. I didn't even know that was an option to begin with. I just went to the Philippines at 13 with Sir Dean to go to a training camp.
Yeah, I know. I saw you the first time then. Yeah, you're still young then.
We just wanted to train in the national team with the national team with other universities to prepare ourselves for the season in the U.S. And then after Master Hong saw us train, he said, "Okay, I want this girl to try." The evaluation.
Okay.
And I'm like, what's that? What do I do? I've never done this. And then after that, sir, I was sparring seniors and juniors.
Quick question, Pauline. That is your first taste of the
national
Philippine evaluation national team grandmaster Hong style.
Forgot it.
Grandmaster Hong Sang. He's sitting on a table. He's just there, and you know, with a couple of serious-looking people around him, and then you're just supposed, you wear armor. You wear armor.
Yes, sir. It was really like that. But I told myself, I have nothing to lose. I don't know anyone. I'm not in the national team. I just want to have fun. Like, I just, that's me. I just want to have fun. I just want to spar and do what I'm good at. And then after that, sir, we were actually on our flight back to the U.S. And then there was a upcoming Korea Open. And Master Hong said, would you guys like to go? Let's go.
I remember that.
And then, sir, it was crazy because I was supposed to start my freshman year in high school. You know, there's a new school. You're going to go into high school. I missed my first week of high school. Without any hesitation, I said, no, I want to compete. I'll handle school when I come back. And then after that, I went back to the U.S. And then we got a call from Grandmaster Hong. And he said, we would like you to compete in the Asian Games. 2010 Guangzhou Asian Games. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, oh my gosh. Like, wow, this is possible. I can compete for the Philippines. It's still looking back after how many years.
A memorable memory.
Yes. Although I didn't win any medal, I made it to quarterfinals. Yay. I lost 2 points. But the whole experience, I can't forget it. You know, even just being teammates with Sir Chom, who I looked up to, who, you know, in that environment, being with Sir Rock, my coaches with Sabum Nim, my first Korean coach I was able to be under, my teammates I met, this is what it's about. It's not just the winning, it's the journey, it's the friendship, it's going to the village, seeing other countries. I never forgot it. And after that, I told my parents, I want to compete for the Philippines. I don't know how we're going to make this work with living in the U.S., but I want to compete for the Philippines. So
this
every
was
year,
high school. You were in high school.
I was only actually, I competed starting 13.
Yeah.
13 in the Asian Games. And then going into freshman year high school, I said to my parents, I promise you I won't let go of school. I promise you that my priorities are straight. I'm focused. And I finished high school on time.
But wait a minute, wait a minute. What did they say? I mean, I'm sure. It's just that I'm, oh my God. I'm binging on
the... Oh, without a doubt. They said yes.
I'm sorry. I'm binging right now. I'm a late comer. I'm binging on the Gilmore Girls. And I'm trying to think you're sitting on the dinner table with your parents. And Dad, Mom, this is my plan. These are my plans. What did they say?
I mean, it was like a collective decision because I know how tough it is also for them to sacrifice also sending their daughter to another country without them. It was a sacrifice, but it was because they knew it was my dream. So they said, yes, go, let's do it. We'll be supporting you all the way.
Okay.
And ever since then, sir, every year I kept... But,
okay, so fast forward, Pauline, fast forward. We go... If you're going to the Philippines, and so, okay, a couple of years, and I know you went on a couple of other trips, I suppose, going back here, my memory doesn't serve me well, but then comes the decision time. You go to the Philippines, you want to be the national team, you've got to join a university. You've got to go to, you cannot, you know, just go straight to the national team. How did that come about? And this is a pretty controversial decision. I don't know if you were being eyed by a lot of universities and coaches, friends of Coach Dean, friends of your father, and if you only knew the back room talks.
Oh, I don't need to know that, sir.
I won't tell it to you. But how did you choose Ateneo?
What had happened, sir? What had happened was I took 2 years off from college. I took a gap year because I just wanted to focus on Rio qualifiers. So I took time off. I was still going back and forth because I didn't want to live in the Philippines yet. And then
that in itself is a tough lifestyle. That, you know, you mentioned it so as a throwaway comment. I go back and forth, sir. Back and forth from LA to Manila. Come on, you know.
But the reason why I did that is just because I couldn't sacrifice not physically being with my family.
Yeah, of course, of course, of course.
But after the Rio qualifiers and Asian Championships and held here in Manila, I decided I have to make a harder sacrifice.
Yeah, okay.
A decision to move to the Philippines. And you know, sir, in the States, college is not, it's not just, it's very pricey.
Of course,
college in the US is very pricey, and not a lot of people know about Taekwondo. There's no scholarships with Taekwondo. So I decided I want to go to the Philippines, and while training, I'd like to study. I'd want to study, because that I sacrificed going to school. I was so eager to go to college, but I wanted to sacrifice that. But the opportunity in the Philippines is so big. They offer you scholarships. You're able to fight for a school, and I've never felt that. You have that school pride. And how did Ateneo come about?
Ateneo, by a bit of background, and I suppose a lot of our listeners know that anyway. I'm an alumni of the grade school and a bit of the high school in Ateneo. It is not the most easiest universities to be a scholar athlete. So again, I go back to you. Why Ateneo?
Well, actually, sir, the first and only option was La Salle. One, we had Circuit Toy, who was handling the national team at the time. He was my coach. And also, and it's a great school. I even shadowed Sir Dax before. And I was set to go there. However, my parents kind of said, okay, why don't you just walk on campus with Sir Jobet and Ateneo? I was like, okay, fine. It's near grandma's house. Why not? And as soon as I stepped on campus, I kind of had
that feeling,
home feeling. And I said, oh no, I think this is it. It was like it made me decide really quick. Yeah.
And you made that decision, I fully understand. My daughter, who's pretty much a little younger than you, Coach Kitoy Protege as well, looked at La Salle, Ateneo, UP. The moment she stepped on UP campus, that was it. So that's the feeling. So
I mean, you feel it in your thigh.
Yeah, but you knew the uphill mountain. It will be an uphill mountain. Come on, I mean the uphill path it will take. I mean, unlike other schools or universities in which you will be given leeway, Ateneo doesn't do that.
Actually, sir, I remember going into Ateneo, and a lot of people were scaring me. You know, it's hard at this and this and this. But I mean, it's me who's gonna do this, not you.
Okay.
You know, like it's me who's gonna do this and not anyone else. So I'm sticking with my decision, and I'm glad I made that decision.
But that's good. That's an interesting. And knowing you, Pauline, and I've known you several years already. I mean, not that long as others, but you have that saying in you that it's not you who's going to do it. It's me. So I'm going to do it my way. And that's the way you do things. Yeah. Okay. Describe your first years, though, there. I mean, was it difficult?
When you got there, you were already
with the national team. And then... Sure. Remember when you're in the national team, and when you get into a team like a school like Ateneo, there's the academics, and there is also the pressure, because there is nobody who feels pressure like Coach Jobet and his training staff. The UAAP is a different breed of cat when it comes to competitions. How was it?
The first 2 years that I was there, it was hard to adjust at first, because I had the responsibility of not just national team, but also the responsibility of being a student athlete. Being a student athlete means you have to attend your university training and national team and study, and not just study just to pass, but study and excel. Because that's how I am also in school, sir. I don't just want to be subpar. I don't just want to be average. I want to excel in what I do. So there's that pressure. And I think I've handled pressure from other people well, because the most pressure I get from anyone is myself, sir.
Okay.
So when I've handled that, I've handled pressure. Because I like to thrive on pressure. Right, that saying that if there's a right amount of pressure, it turns into diamonds. I've learned that from Sir Dean, and I never forgot it.
Okay.
So
you can turn it into diamonds. Exactly. Yeah. So, okay.
Right, sir. That saying. So when I was in Ateneo the first year, of course it was hard. Everyone's eyes are on you. Just coming off from Asian Championships, they're like eyeing on you. And at the same time, Ateneo has never gotten a podium finish for 18 years. So my first year with the guidance of Sir Jobet, Coach Elmer, it kind of just, blessings in disguise kind of just aligned. And then we had that bronze finish. And it was difficult really to adjust amongst, not just with a team, it's hard to adjust from school. I mean, lifestyle as well. You're going from Katipunan, training in the national team in
yes.
Yocampo, then I have to go back. So I had to adjust tremendously. And honestly, it was so hard. There were times I just wanted to cry and just tell my parents, I want to go home. Like, I don't want to be here. But I had to see it through because I made that decision. I wanted to prove to myself that I can do it. And once I adjusted, once I got the hang of things, I truly enjoyed it. I miss physically going to school. I miss seeing Jesu. I miss being in that classroom feeling, seeing my professors and classmates. And ayun, sir.
Yeah. Although I do know that, it happens. My daughter also had that. You got a prolonged stay also in university, in fact, up till now. But then that's because of your goal, your dreams. It must have been difficult. Look, I put this in the context in which here you are. You're a Phil-Am girl. I mean, again, not to stereotype you, but when I met you, you weren't being chauffeured from Ateneo to Rizal Memorial. You were riding that train. You were riding all sorts of stuff. You're wearing, you're wearing tights with your knapsacks. You know, was that what you were wearing? You were wearing tights, right? Leggings. I'm sorry. Leggings. You're riding. And I remember seeing you. Pauline, don't you think you should dress a little bit more appropriately while you're commuting from Quezon City to Manila? But you said, no, sir. What's wrong with what I'm wearing? I remember you telling me that. But my thinking is you were doing that every day. Now, I say this, of course, a lot of other universities, scholar athletes from UP, FEU, NU, you know that, your teammates with them, they were doing that. But you were doing it. This was not your background. This was not your, you know. And then you were showing up and doing this. This was not all a bed of roses. Then you even joined TBBTBS. That's an added. Was there a time when you felt that I'm doing too much? And we know how it is when you're training, you're having injuries and you're having. Not every training day is spectacular. There are training days in which, damn, this 45 kick isn't getting in. I'm getting hit with stupid shots. My stepping is not working. So, and then you're being screamed at. Well, not really screamed at. Coach Caloy, Coach Dindo, Coach Kitoy, don't do that anymore. But was there a time that you felt that I want to quit this? Why am I doing this? What am I doing here? Why am I putting myself in this kind of ringer?
Not necessarily, sir. Not to that extreme, to the point where I just want to leave and go. No, naman, sir. But there were times where I had to reassess, reevaluate, reflect, and it always circles back to the dream. It always circles back to the dream. Why I'm doing this? This is for me, for a better future, opportunities for what you want to go after. So every time I'm having a hard day, or you know, after studying, going to class, okay, oh my gosh, I have to walk, take a trike all the way to the train station, I have to do this. And when the hard days where I do not want to, I've always journaled, and until today I always journal for my mental training. I always circle it. I always circle the Olympic rings. I've always, this is what you need to, these are the hard steps. These are the hard steps you have to go through. Everything matters. Really, sir, everything matters. Your time, your priorities, even just, you know, the small thing of, oh, my legs hurt today. I have to should I take an Uber? Oh no, the Uber is really expensive today. Okay, I have to take the train even if I'm tired. Those small things, those small sacrifices, they add up. And even now, I feel like I'm in that age or phase where it's, especially during the time of COVID, where you actually have the time to sit in your thoughts. I look back and reflect, like, wow, I really did that. And before, who would have thought I can do this? I didn't think I could do it, but I did those things, and it tells me that you're resilient, you're strong, so keep going. Keep elevating yourself. There you go, sir.
Yeah. Well, I remember also, although that because I would be coming from the gym upstairs, and I would go down to go to my bike or to my car, and I would see you still inside the gym downstairs alone. Of course, you may have been doing that because going back to Quezon City, there will be less traffic if you if you traveled, started commuting, you know, on a later, but think at a later time. But I think you were doing that really because I know what you mean. You wanted to put in the extra time because the extra time, you know, is that extra work will help you out in the long run. Well, you joined. I mentioned joining the TBB TBS. What was that all about? You didn't have to do that. you had enough on your plate. I mean,
yeah, it was a lot, sir. But you know, Sir Jobet, he's very persuasive, and also,
he is. Yeah.
I just wanted to follow also the footsteps of my father, and I can see the brotherhood, the teammates. The batchmates he had. I wanted something like that. I wanted to also learn different things, and those things, at the end of the day, if you're a TBB, TBS, around the world, if you know someone, it's like, oh, that's my brother, that's my sister. Even if there are seniors or juniors, it's a big so-called family. So there's that, sir, and I've learned a lot while being in TBB TBS also, sir.
Okay, well, we go forward. I go back to the question that I mentioned earlier, which we shelved for a while. With regards to the evolution of World Taekwondo, WT Taekwondo through the years, there are schools of thought who feel that the sport aspects of the new Taekwondo is extremely unattractive, bordering on boredom, you know, when they watch it. Compared to the older school of Taekwondo competitions, which were your father, Coach Bobby Vargas, Coach Dean Vargas went through. What's your view about this?
I feel that if you're not in it, if you're not the one who's competing, it's different also, sir. Because I saw the both sides, or I kind of grew up in both sides. So I too also know that it's unattractive to people who hasn't seen the sport, or people who don't truly like understand it yet. You know, I get that. But in anything, if you don't evolve, if you don't adapt, how will you win? Even if you try very showy kicks in the sport now, how can you win, right, sir? So I know, especially when I see comments on Facebook, when I see a video of the matches.
How do you feel about that? Yeah, when you see those comments.
Well, not necessarily it makes me angry, anything like that. I think there's a lack of understanding. There's a lack of understanding at, even though it's unattractive, what we're doing now, it's still difficult.
Oh, yes, I agree.
How many hours of training you put in. There's a lack of understanding and lack of truly seeing what it takes to get to that level. But I still feel that maybe I wish players and athletes, even myself, I want to try those showy kicks. You know, at the SEA Games, I said, last seconds, might as well do something you've never done, or not never done, but haven't done in a while. So I wanted to just do that, just to, you know, have that burst of fire. And I understand why fighters do it now. I mean, those last seconds, I now understand why they want to do that. But those flashy, showy kicks, I believe that if you keep doing that in a fight today, it might not win unless that's really your game. Unless that's how you score, unless that's how you do it and that's your style, then go for it. But okay. I just feel that there's still a lack of understanding, not amongst Taekwondo practitioners, but those also who outside don't understand it. And I wish they could understand it more.
Okay. But if I were to ask you your game, Pauline, not me, because I've called your game so many times as a commentator. The Southeast Asian Games, I saw you there. I know what you're saying, that last minute turning long kick. Okay, I've seen you done that a million times, even at the PTL. But if I were to ask you, what's your game?
Right now, sir, I feel like my game is still front leg, right leg heavy, aggressive. Too aggressive sometimes where I don't stop kicking. So there's that, sir. Also, I like to see and be patient a little bit and know when to kick the right time. But I also, my game is also guided by my coaches, what they see.
Of course.
So there's not a particular kick that I do. It's situational, right, sir? So I feel like I'm a right leg heavy kicker. When I fight, aggressive head kicker, definitely love to hit. I definitely love scoring in the head.
Okay, so that back leg 45s
comes and goes sometimes.
If you see there's an opening, you'll throw it. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Here's a controversial question. Again, you've seen the evolution of Kirugi Taekwondo over the years. I mean, you went to the old school and all, and this now you're still a student of the new electronic system. What would you want to see improved or changed in the Olympic style electronic scoring and judging in WT Taekwondo?
Oh, sir, that's actually a hard question to answer.
Take a stab at it.
I think what I've experienced this year, since we were off of we were on hiatus for a while, I feel I wish there's an improvement in the electronic scoring part, because as much as they would want to be subjective, which is fair, it's trying to be as fair as we can be, there's still cons, and you know, sometimes you don't really hit the head, but then someone scores, you know, those things. I feel like we just it could improve on being more efficient, more what's that word, efficient and exact.
Okay. I think I understand. Yeah. But okay, I suppose I want to be those are all well and good, Pauline. Siguro the question that I'm trying to nail down here is, would you want more risk taking to be done in the current game that you guys are doing now? More risk taking in so far as the techniques.
Risk taking in what sense?
A lot of people saying that maybe we should give more award, more points, reward more scores or points to those who, you know, who utilize the more strongest points of Taekwondo, whether it's the spinning kicks.
Oh, I understand. I mean, it would definitely be nice to see that. Yes, sir. But it's still up to the athlete. It's still, can you imagine, sir, we did add the turning stuff to points, right?
Yes, yes.
But what works for the athlete? It's still those cut kicks. It's still those front legs. Yeah. It's still those jabs. So it's up to the athlete.
Because, siguro, Pauline, here's the argument. We talked about this in that chat group that we have with your father, the 80s TBB TBS, and they were saying, it's as if, you know, you go to the mat before the fight, you're not really looking to beat this guy. You're looking to beat the scoring system, to beat the sensors.
Sure. That's
are you comfortable with that? How do you look at that?
Of course, sir. I miss that. Like that loud, you just want to kick hard, make them like do a turning side, make them like scrunch down, like I miss those. But with our sport, I feel with the research I've done on it and why they did what they did. It's one, they wanted to be efficient, yes, fair, and safer. So I understand that part, and to remain in the Taekwondo wanted to remain in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. We had to evolve, we had to adapt. And looking back at it, I understand what they did, but I would still love to see those crazy stuff.
Yeah, okay.
You know, well,
fair enough. Yes. Another question, Pauline. Okay, you are not anymore grassroots Taekwondo. I mean, you were a couple of years back. You are now a veteran. You are now at the forefront, and you've been through several wars already internationally, and you will be in future. But with regards to those who are looking up to you, you've seen recently we just finished the online, the Philippine Taekwondo online speed kicking, you know, in lieu of Kyurugi, of course. And you've seen that all over the country, there's still a lot of young Taekwondo jins, grassroots Taekwondo jins, who want to follow your footsteps. Are we on the right track? What should we be looking for with regards to young players? And I say this also in the context, Pauline, and you know what I'm talking about. You've competed with guys from jins from kalimutan na natin Korea, Thailand, yes, Indonesia, Malaysia, RRR, and you've seen Thailand, the leaps and bounds they've done. Yes. Where are we? How can we get there? What should we look for in our young players right now, the 8-year-old, 9-year-olds who are now in Visayas, Mindanao, Cordilleras?
Well, right now, of course, it's hard to discover new athletes.
Of course, COVID, yeah.
Because I understand that. But if we were during the old normal, I feel that definitely it's always when an athlete who is committed, who works hard, who's open-minded, who just wants to elevate their game, who's a martial artist first and foremost, those things really helps elevate and even gets them to places they never even knew they can succeed in, right, sir? But with the proper guidance, of course, with the proper guidance of our association with PTA, with Grandmaster Hong, what he's doing, it's finding all these players from different places, from the coaches that PTA has. It's the system that works, right, sir? So I feel, hopefully when things start to get better, I hope people that are even in cities and regions that we didn't even know had great players, I hope, and I don't know how we're gonna get there, but I hope they have the opportunity to showcase their skills, no matter what background they come from, no matter what class they come from. I really do hope in some way or form they have the opportunity, they get the opportunity. But as we're speaking, sir, if you ask me, I don't know how that's gonna happen, but I hope there's a chance.
Okay, you know, I'll make it a very simple sort of question. So there's this guy, he's Juan Manuel Miguel, whatever, or Anastasio. He's there out there in Palawan. He's a son of a farmer. He's got feet as this big, yay big, and he can hit. Look, it's like Kurt Barbosa. I mean, some kid like that who can hit a fast 45 and suddenly, sometimes it starts with that. The techniques are very simple, but that's the heart of a champion, of a mindset of steel, who looks at somebody, I don't know who you are, I'm gonna beat you, I want to get somewhere. What do you want to say to him or to her?
Thank you, sir, you added that. No, but I feel that one, it's a heart, the heart of an athlete, that's something that you can't learn,
teach,
right?
Yeah.
You can't teach it, you can't just learn it, like, you know you have it. So what I want to say that to them is, pursue your dream. Find out how you can get there. have your, if there's that trifecta that I've learned, if you're, you always need to have your parents, your coaches, and yourself involved in that situation, right? And I would tell that person to pursue your dream and plan accordingly. Plan with your coach, plan with your parents, and see the ways you can get there and continue to train. What, now we're in this age of technology. Watch videos, watch fights, watch how athletes, you know, the known athletes that they follow, watch them online. What do they do? How do they carry themselves? How do you carry yourself? What values do you have with you? Try to educate yourself. Those things, sir. But I also understand that not everyone has the means and opportunity to do that. And up to this day, because I'm in psychology, right, sir? So I'm trying to find ways, how can you help someone in that way? How do parents help their kids reach their dreams if they don't have the means or they don't have the opportunities? How can we do those things? How do you encourage them? So up until today, sir, I don't have the answer yet, but I can say is, really educate yourself. Why do you want this dream? Educate yourself about yourself. Why do you want to do this? What's making you do this? Do you have the heart for it? Are you committed? Will you be committed? The dream is free, right, sir? But the hard work, the hours you put in, and not just in your sport, but in your family, in your school, and in whatever you're doing, that's, it's all a ladder to what you want to do.
That's well said, Pauline. Yeah. Listen, Pauline, you reaped so much glory and benefits from your years in Taekwondo, and you're not yet over in your journey. Here's now, I give you now the opportunity to thank all the people, family, loved ones, friends, organizations, institutions who have helped you along the way. Sino ang mga gusto mong pasalamatan?
First and foremost, sir, thank you so much for having me and then letting me be in this podcast and platform to speak my truth, to speak my story. So thank you, sir. I want to thank you, Grandmaster Hong. I really wouldn't be here in this situation, here with all these opportunities, challenges, victories and losses, and learnings and experiences without his support, sir. I want to thank our association, PTA, Philippine Taekwondo Association, Philippine Sports Commission, Philippine Olympic Committee, MVPSF, for all the support throughout the years. Of course, my family, mom, dad, hello if you're watching this, my siblings and my sister's newborn, Rory. I know she's not going to be able to understand this, but hi. And to family, friends, and supporters who's always been there, thank you for, you know, believing in me, for continuing to support me, and to everyone else who's watching this, thank you.
Okay. Well, any special people that you want to say hi to?
I pretty much said everyone.
Really? I asked this because a lot of your fans, listeners, particularly SockMed, you know, feel that they don't know if you're single and ready to mingle.
Sir, and that's for next time.
Really? I mean, maraming mabibitin dyan. So you're the crush ng bayan with regards to, you know.
My heart is just for someone else. So just keep it at that, sir.
Let's keep it at that. So you must be a private person. Okay, there you go. Okay, I also give you an opportunity to plug your other endeavors, especially your social media projects. You're very active. A lot of people think that magsha-showbiz kaya to si Pauline. Ang ganda-ganda niya. Things like that.
I mean, if you guys have Instagram or Twitter or even TikTok, you guys can follow me at Pauline, PAUWEENIE, there to catch up with what I'm doing and what's the road up ahead for me. I believe, sir, right now I just want to focus on school, continue to train, and keep my mental health in check, especially during these times. We're still in uncertainty. However, we keep going through life, and there, sir.
Okay, well, listen, Pauline, this is not in the script. Ito, I just jotted this down. I mean, knowing you, kakilala na tayo and all that, and kanina we talked earlier before the interview how about defeat and obstacles along the way. what did you learn from Lebanon and well, Jordan and Lebanon? And prior to that, I mean,
this actually, the COVID-19 situation and having that year off really put a lot of things in perspective, really put in my mind what truly matters, and going back into training, being in the bubble, the sacrifice, it not only taught me a lot about my sport and what people can accomplish, but it taught me a lot about myself as well, and how that saying, once you get knocked down, are you going to get back up? How are you going to get back up? How do you handle the situation? And it it definitely brought me closer to God. Okay. There's that, if you trust in Him, if you trust in His plan, why are you worrying? If you gave your best on the court, if you gave all, you should be proud of yourself. So those things, it really taught me a lot about myself. And at the same time, it taught me a lot on how to reflect and how to make yourself not just a better athlete, not just as a better martial artist, but also a better human being. Better human being in terms of, that's what our conversation was leading up to earlier, sir. I love what you're talking about, how Taekwondo taught you a lot about how to get up or how to handle situations, especially losses. But this sport is not only teaching you how to become a martial artist, but it connects humanity. It connects us on how we empathize. You know, being in a bubble, I learned to really observe my teammates, observe my coaches. How do we interact with each other? You know, we're lucky and blessed to have that interaction in a bubble where other athletes around the world can't even see each other. So there's that. I learned how to be human, how to have mistakes, and how to learn from them. So those things, sir. And to this day, it's still very hard to hear about the Olympics because it's heartbreaking.
Of course.
But it's what you do with it. How are you gonna, paano ka babangon, so to speak?
Well, okay. Paano ka babangon? Again, here's another question I jotted down. Pasensya na ka, Paulina. This is what a journalist does. I jotted this down. I remember your father telling me before na Pauline is one of the most intense people I know when she sets her mind on something.
I like yeah. People.
So, tanong Pauline, and I asked this, I don't know if this applies to you, because while what your father said is correct, your style of fighting is not that. You are methodical. You are not, you don't wear your heart on your sleeve. Everything is planned. Okay. Right? Plan A, B, C. I mean, you know, yung laban mo, ganun ang style. So I ask, is this intensity not a drawback? Shouldn't, in Pumsi kasi, one of the things we learn is that the more you think about it, the more you want to get it, the more, shit, it really gets away from you. Could this be a problem?
Sometimes, sir, I think that's the thing I also learned in these two tournaments. You have to find that balance. Sometimes it takes an athlete a year, sometimes it takes them 10 years. But there's that balance to just go all in. But then if you go all in and not think while playing, right? How can you win? So there's that balance I had to find. And I feel like my dad said that because he hasn't seen me fight in a while. The very first tournament he's actually seen me compete ever, like physically, was the SEA Games. That's the only tournament he's ever seen me compete for the Philippines. So I feel like he says that because back then I was so intense to the point where I don't even think when I fought. I trust the coach behind me and just go, 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 go. Don't think, just go. And although it's worked sometimes, I feel it also comes with maturity and learning the sport. The 10 years, there's that maturity. There's that learning experience. So that's when it evolves and changes. And I feel like that goes for a lot of athletes. If you stay the same athlete, how can you?
That's true. You have to evolve. Now, I also ask this, again, this is just talking athlete to athlete or coach to athlete. A main difference, I had an interview with a couple of weeks ago with, you know her, Jade Zafra, who who's also a former champion. And she was saying, while she also had coaches, iba yung coach siya, si Dindo Simpao, coach Dindo Simpao, she said, naging coach na rin si Coach Kitoy Cruz. And Coach Kitoy naman has a different mindset. Ang kanya, when you go to a tournament, he noticed, Coach Kitoy noticed that a lot of players were saying, uy, makakatapat ko si ganito, si ganyan, sana hindi ko siya mabunod sa... Coach Kitoy said, that's the most stupidest thing that an athlete should do. You don't think about draws. You go there and that's it. Ikaw, you don't seem to have that problem. You're absolutely fearless kung sino mabubunod mo. And but how... What would you say tungkol sa style naman, yung mindset naman ni Coach Kitoy? What would you say about
that? No, sir. That's literally like how I grew up. It's just a body. It's just nameless, faceless, that old school mentality that I still carry with me today. Nameless, faceless. Literally, you're pretty much fighting yourself on the court. Don't doubt yourself. If you truly trust your training and your coach, that's just a nameless, faceless body that you have to fight.
Yeah.
Right? So there's that, sir. But now, you have to evolve. You have to change. We have the blessing of technology. If you know who your opponent is,
you have to study him, study her.
But also situational, because some athletes don't prosper in that way. For me, I watched the first 30 seconds of the fight. I don't want to see it anymore. That's it. Because they're not going to do the same exact thing in that video, right? So that's how I think. Yeah. But other athletes like my teammates, Arvin and Kurt, they watch day in, day out. Watch. And it works for them. So there's that. Sir. And I hated that. I hated the hearing that, sir. That's just me. I hated
it. I understand where you're coming from, Pauline, because we talked about this earlier before the interview. Martial arts to me is, this is the moment. This is the window. You go there, either you get it or you don't, you know. And then the next battle is up ahead. That's why I was watching this MMA thing with Conor McGregor. He breaks his foot.
God.
That's it. So it's done. I mean, they shouldn't have interviewed him while he had broken his foot. But
do you see how
he looks
like...
forward? Yeah.
No, but it's not just that. Do you see the essence of being a fighter, of being an athlete, is the other person who won didn't even feel like it was a win because you're not fighting the best version of the other person.
That's true.
That's something I've learned from Sir Rock is if you're going to fight, you would want to fight the best person because...
Of course.
You would want that. But, you know, not a lot of athletes see it that way, but that comes with time because... Lord knows when I was younger, I was had that fear, but I don't show it because that's just who I am.
Yeah.
But it just comes with time, maturity, and experience. And of course, proper guidance from Grandmaster Hong, from my coaches. And there's this saying that Grandmaster Hong has said time and time again, it's do or die on the court. It's do or die on the court. And if you don't do what you want to do or what you're best at or your best, you die.
Okay.
So there's that, sir.
Okay, last question before we finish, Pauline. I mean, this is a recent addition to my podcast. There's a bit of Boy Abunda in this. You're walking along the road from Ateneo going home and you find a lamp. You rub the lamp and out comes a genie. And the genie says, ooh, wow, what a pretty girl who just picked up the lamp and freed me. For this, I give you one wish, not three, just one. And it just so happened, you just came from Jordan, from Lebanon. You're chilling, you're relaxing out. He gives you this one wish. What would you want to get as a wish from me to achieve your goals in Taekwondo? And I know what your goal in Taekwondo, Pauline, is. You want to get that crack again at the Olympics. I don't know. Maybe there's something up there. And this is the genie said, it's just one. What is it that you want from me? What is that wish that he will grant you? Is it? Oh, sorry. And bawal lang, I want to be 6'5". Like that girl from China. No, bawal yon. What else? No physical attribute. It has to be.
No physical attribute. My mind is like running, sir, because I only have one wish.
We can make
it's
two.
No, it's okay, sir.
One lang.
it's not because, of course, you can't turn back time and we have to be realistic. It's to have another shot at this, to have another shot at this, to be the best version of myself when I have that shot and earn it the way that you should earn it.
No, but there you go. Sorry, Pauline, I'm going to put you in the spot. The genie is asking, hey, look, I'll give you that shot, but what do you need to get the shot?
Another chance, sir.
What tools do you need? What do you have? Need a stronger mindset? Do you need a faster 45? Do you need the when you did this cutting kicks with this girl from
ability to use my left leg more? But of course, use my left leg more. That
hello. So sir. that's the takeaway from
that is the
from
wish.
Jordan from Jordan.
Yes,
use that left leg more.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, with that, listen, I mean, Pauline, such an honor. I mean, there are no other plans, showbiz plans or something. No, nothing waiting in the wings. You're focused on studies and, of course, Taekwondo. And whoever is your secret admirer out there, you know. Thank you very much for being our guest. Last minute, shout out to those your fans out there who are saying, God, go Pauline. I mean, every time you post something, there are a lot of people, we're still with you, Pauline. So what do you want to say to them?
Oh, really, sir? Actually, you know, I was off of social media for a while. I was still grieving and I posted about the loss from qualifiers and it honestly uplifted my spirits to those who were still telling me, no, it's okay, trust in his plan and you're still our champion. That, my heart, I was really crying reading those comments, but I just want to say thank you so much. God bless you all. And I hope you guys are staying safe, healthy, sane during these times. So thank you again. And I hope and sometime soon we can all be together soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, Pauline, and say hi to your grandparents for me, your parents and your family, and God bless you, and keep safe and keep sane, keep healthy, keep on training, and
yes,
let's strengthen that that left leg.
Left leg, yes,
okay.
Sir.
Okay, bye-bye, Pauline, love
you.
One mind.
Bye. Thank you, sir, one mind.
That was a good interview. There's a unique mix of style and confidence in the way Pauline Lopez moves, which is rare even for other athletes who've earned the right to wear gold medals around their necks. There's a purpose to each action she takes. Pauline continues to be a strong influencer of her generation, one of the Philippines' rising sports stars. She is young but battle-tested. Nothing short of a finish at the top will make the dream she's worked for to come to life. It does get tiring, she admitted in the interview. But quitting is the furthest from her mind. For now, she's taking a step back and assessing what the future might be in store for her. And she likes what she sees. She still has the fire, the hunger, to put in the work necessary to achieve her goals, which are to be able to provide for herself and for her family and leave a mark when she retires from competitive Taekwondo. You've got this, Pauline. Fighting. One mind. This is Joel Laksamana, host of the podcast Taekwondo Matters. Please click the like or subscribe button if this episode caught your fancy. We promise to bring you more such inspiring tales in the future. Keep safe, keep sane, and keep healthy. Charut!